March 30th, 1996. Rob in Louisville, Kentucky. Today's topic is suppression or depression. All right. Yes, we're recording. So today's topic, as we chatted about earlier, suppression or depression. So before we go into all the aspects of that, throw out Rob's definition, what he thinks those things are. And I've recognized a lot of suppression happening in this community, so I thought we'd talk about suppression. A lot of people I bumped into are getting treated for depression. They're taking their Prozac and doing their parts and all their antidepressants. So there's a number of people feeling like it's not okay to be themselves. And so what I argued with in college is that I don't believe there is any such thing as depression, at least not with the impetus that we put on it. I believe that depression is the same as just being angry or happy or giggly or sad. It's just an in-the-moment feeling, and that what we really need to look at is where you guys might be suppressing yourselves. And so if a big lead weight sits on you, that big lead weight squeezes air out of you and squeezes blood and guts over here, and it's very frustrating, and you get angry, and it's hard to move, and every move you make, it can't breathe. It's just smashed. And so if you feel smashed, and it's not okay to be you, and if you try to be yourself, we put more weight upon you. We that weight just wasn't heavy enough. We need to lean on it some more. Squeezes more of the air out of you. And when you're not oxygenated and you're not filling with your life force, or you're not feeling inspired with yourself, or it's just not okay to be your truthful and honest self, one of the things that does come out is depression. So and I think it's a perfect day to be talking about it. That's why I asked before we started the tape, because today's just prior to a thunderstorm sort of energy, so there's a lot of ions in the air, and there's a lot of the barometric pressure is doing its climbing thing, so little vice is on there. So not only are we going to talk about suppression or rocks, but the universe has decided to send a little extra heavy air for you guys. So while we talk about this, pay attention to your breathing. One of the biggest things that happens in America is they call this the land of the free and home of the brave. And I have yet to experience that to be true. Or that, as we talked about last week, looking for that adult, you know, it's like a snipe hunt. There's no such thing as an adult. So, and you guys are all being asked to hold yourselves to an adult status, or take care of your children, or not be a child, or act with responsibility. Responsibility to me means your ability to respond to yourself, not to us and our needs and wants. And in fact, the more clearly you can respond to who you are, the more it puts us in a position where we have to take care of our own stuff. And since in America, I'm just going to pick on America since that's where we are today, it's got a really great habit of blaming everybody else for its problems. The dog stole my newspaper, therefore the Democrats did this. So what's happening is you'll get shuffled onto you all the reasons why we disappointed somebody. You made me mad, or you made me so mad, I have to tell you how I really feel, or now I can react to you, or I can respond to you. My favorite one is, you finally made me so mad. Finally, I didn't know I was really trying. Finally, like I'd been efforting for 6 months to make you mad. It's not okay to say your truth. It's not okay to have needs and wants. It's not okay to express those needs and wants, because they might frighten the people whose needs and wants are getting projected upon you. And so if you go ahead and do it your way, and then you're not helping them with their needs, then they have the right to sit on you some more, or put some more energy, or you disappointed me, and you made me angry, and you abandoned me, and you betrayed me, and you're fun, I like you, because you do it just the way I want you to for me. and you tell me I'm a nice person, that's what I need to hear, even though everyone else says I'm a jerk. So I like you. And what's the truth, or what isn't? What we see in other people, as we've talked about before, is a reflection of who you are. What's coming up for everybody here is we're in the 90s, which is the decade of truth. And as we get near the end of this decade of truth, you're all being really pushed to be your real selves, whatever that is, and whatever age it's at. So it's really great to have you here. I'm watching my youngest one go through it, watching my daughter. I'm expecting my grandson any day now to start just telling her who he should be and like back off. You know, as soon as he can like talk more other than feed me and shut up and no and yes. As soon as he gets past those, she's in big trouble. Because today's kids, they're coming in with a certain knowingness about who they are, much more than we did. We came in thinking we're who we're supposed to be for these people, and I'm recognizing more and more, no, Dad, no, Dad, this is who I am, but thank you for sharing. That was, or as my kids say to me, you might like to use this one on your, I'm sorry, she's here, I really apologize. What I taught my kids to say to me, which really helps bust me on my stuff, is they go, that was really a nice try, Dad. Like, I'll try to tell them how I thought it should be, and if I leave them out of the conversation, like, I don't say, well, what's your opinion, or what do you see, or what are some of the options? They'll just go, that was a nice try. In other words, you can try to tell me 5 or 6 more things, maybe one of them I'll listen to, but that wasn't one of them. And so at least with today's young people, it's harder to suppress them. So it's going to be more of our problem. In fact, they because of their autonomy and because of their ability to run more energy than we were, it actually puts us between a rock and a hard place, because those of you who have kids now have to speak up even more about who you are and what you need and want. So the homework assignment here is to lift this weight that's off of you, to recognize that the only thing you're responsible to is yourself. You are not responsible for other people's feelings. America, everybody's being responsible for everyone else's feelings, and so we've got nobody with any identity. We have a they identity and a you identity and a tri-identity, but we don't have ourselves. And so as you start to claim who you are, as this decade of truth pushes you, it's really scary, because I want you to know that everybody's going through it. You're not alone. It feels like it's just me. Or when you're in a group like this, well, maybe that's a common thing we all have. It doesn't matter who the person is. You can go to the most serious, structured Baptist church, pick the minister, and have a chat with him, and he is going through. If he's not being his absolute truth self, or she's not being her absolute truth self, they're going through an identity crisis. They're really being pushed, and it's scary. The first thing that comes up is fear, because that's the number one thing we've used to put the rock on you. We will not love you. We will abandon you. We will not give you sustenance or nurturing. In fact, we might even torture you. Just not only will we not give you sustenance, we might throw in a little beating on the side, or feed you to the lions, or my favorite one I saw the other day, which was what made me giggle. Some kid didn't want to leave the store, so the mom said, "Well, I'm just going to leave you then." And the kid, "Oh, you played that before, Mom." So the kid just kept doing, "I'm leaving now. I'm leaving now." I'll watch. I'm sure you're leaving now. Thank you very much. They're getting too sophisticated. We try, the stuff that worked on us does not work on them. And so we've got to start waking up and getting real. And what is your truth is the big question. And for all ages. And what is that saying? The truth shall set you free. So the truth. I once got an F on a test that asked for my opinion. And you haven't heard that joke before, but you guys are probably tired of hearing it by now, because I've seen these guys a few times. When you speak your opinion, it's simply your truth. It's really not up for grading. But you need to understand that you were told, if you speak up and tell your truth, we will abandon you. We might punish you, disintegrate you, torture you, certainly not love you. You're not one of us. Go find your own family or your own home. And that could be within your peer group, your church group, standing in the elevator, eating at the restaurant, or being with your family. So in this decade of truth, as it pushes you to be your true self, it's really pushing you, if you're afraid of being yourself, towards terror. And it feels more and more suffocating. So you can take my picture. So the first order of business is to... Oh, I got to pause. I love cameras. It's such a distraction. We're in the 90s, the decade of truth, and what's coming up is you're all going through cellular changes. And some of you have heard me talk about that before, so bear with me as we lead into it. There's a few here that haven't heard it. Time and matter are changing. Just your whole cellular structure is changing. And in fact, have you noticed that it just, like, to do something today for you, you could do a lot faster 2 or 3 years ago? It usually seems like right around 15, 16 is when they start getting it, so I wasn't sure if you got it yet. Does everything feel like normal speed still to you? Can you notice that it's speeding up? Like for us, for all of us in this room, what we used to be able to do 10 years ago, it now takes twice as long to do it. And we think something's like we're getting to be old farts or something. And we're actually moving along pretty fast. It's not that problem. Hi, guys. We'll catch you at the break. So in this 90s, the decade of truth, you're actually witnessing time change. You're actually, it looks like it's the same old one thing after the other step, but it's melting and warping and shifting. And the next thing that's shifting is in the fifth dimensional region of matter. If you think something matters, all of a sudden it's real serious. And if you think it doesn't matter, it's gone. It used to be, oh, that doesn't matter, and then it would hound you for 5 or 6 weeks. Now it fades away very fast. And so you can take full advantage of that if you'll live in your truth. If you're living in a lie because you're afraid of being yourself, then all you do is keep reinventing that wheel, keep flipping it back in. So in this era we're in now, the last part of the 90s, if you'll simply start experimenting, and we'll go through some things that will help you discover what your truth is. As you look for what your truth is, it'll have that little fear will come at you, or that big lead weight, but it'll bypass you. You don't have to sit with it for 6 weeks and give up. So what is your truth? That's going to be a really good question today, because what was my truth this morning is not my truth this afternoon. What I think is true right now will probably be totally different by tomorrow. And if you all remember when you were kids, I'm going to be a doctor, and I think I'll be a nurse, and I think I'll be a fireman, and I think I'll be a veterinarian. And that's all in just 10 seconds, let alone what you did for the rest of the day. And we the adults, or the rest of the world said, oh, well, that's really nice. That one sounds good. That's the one I wanted to be. Or that one can make you money. Or no, you don't get to be a prostitute. Yes, you could be a cheerleader. That's really cute, but it doesn't make money as a profession. And so we'll talk everybody out of different things. And if it's what you came to do, and if it was your joy to express in that fashion or do any form of that energy, and we told you can't do it, that's the moment you died. That's the moment you became somebody other than who you were. And no matter how perfectly you live your life as an accountant, if accounting isn't what you came here to do, or if cheerleading wasn't what you came here to do, and you were being a cheerleader when you should have been an accountant, the accountant should have been the cheerleader, should have switched around, neither of you will be happy. In fact, the tests are, if you do it perfectly, or you thought you were doing it well, but you don't feel fulfilled, satisfied, or whole, you didn't do it for you, you did it for some outside measurement. And as the 90s get close to the end, you're being more and more forced to tell your truth or live your truth, or it gets exposed, or they send Edith in to nuke you. Yeah, if any of you want to lie to yourselves, we'll send Edith in. There are people out there who are there to move it along. So Jason, you know, isn't it perfect that you don't even have to do it? Right before you came here, Edith, we're talking about, wouldn't it be great just to give his dad a chat? And so Edith comes in, and I gave your dad a chat. I nuked him. I gave him this. And so it's like synchronicity. We're talking about the synchronicity of the beeper. Everything's getting handled. If it's not your job to educate your parents, if it's not your job to do anything other than to learn what your truth is, trust that. Look, I'm so grateful she's here today. Say, hey, Jason, I'll take care of it. You just go live your life. While I'm working on my stuff, I'll nuke him for you. I'll educate him. Know that you, in order to get witnessed by him, you can trust that the universe is working in this fashion. That as much as we, and I'm poor Jason, we're going to pick on you for a moment. No matter what, we can't hide right now from the truth. Just ask Judge Thomas and ask OJ, and you know, look at all the systems and the corporate systems, the church systems. Oh, please, I've sinned, you know, 5 times. But after a couple of times of crying, it doesn't work anymore. We're all getting busted on our stuff, and you've got to be willing to be okay with that, to know that you got lied to. You might be living a lie. You might really think that that's your truth, and if it isn't, it will get pushed, and it will get shoved to the surface. And if you're sitting under that big rock that we talked about at the beginning, that suppression, then it just adds more and more suffocation, more and more. It's almost like you're scratching at it, and it... So the first order of business to get through all that stuff is to recognize that, yes, you'd like to live your life in truth, and most likely you're not, or you wouldn't be here. And you could be close to your truth. Edith's real close to her truth, but what is that little elusive truth running around? Is to recognize if you're sitting under that rock, no matter how well you do your truth, if you're being suppressed, you will feel depressed. If that big heavy weight's on you, you will feel depressed, you will feel malaise, you will feel exhausted, you'll feel restricted, you'll feel angry, frustrated, disappointed, all the ids. I guess they're all end in that. So how do we lift that weight that's on us? A number of ways. My favorite way is the first is just simply to pay attention to your breathing. And most of you have heard my breathing chat before, but I do want to, anybody not want to hear it again, it's a good time to take a break. Here comes the breathing chat. It's been my experience in doing this for 35 years that this one thing has made the biggest difference for people without having to do all this tons of therapy or vision quests or soul searching or rotor rootering. This one technique, if you'll really, I'm going to make it real simple. So when you hear, and it works for all ages too. I taught it to my kids when they were very little, and it's made such a big difference for them. It's simply to recognize that we are, live in a place where they call it the land of the free and home of the brave. Well, okay, it might be the land of, but I haven't met that person. And there's that we're always saying you should grow up and be an adult. I really do think that's a snipe hunt. I've yet to meet an adult. And if you ever do see one, send them to me. I'm going to put them in a little box and tour them like Tom Thumb, and I'm going to make a fortune. You ever had that? There was an adult here a minute ago. They just left. Oh, you just missed them. So these things are being held against. We even suppress ourselves based on some icon that we haven't even met yet. We haven't met a free or brave person. What is it? Nathan Hale, is he the one? My brain slipped for a minute there. Give me liberty, give me death, kill him. That's easy. That was an easiest choice. That request is always going to be fulfilled in the latter. Yes, or Orwellian thinking, all pigs are created equal, some are just more equal than others. And you better be in the or more equal than other version, or you're dead. So it's very suppressive here. And so to challenge all of that when you don't know what your truth is, and we've squeezed your needs and wants out of you, and you don't breathe and you don't feel fulfilled and inspired, is a self-defeating proposition. It just confirms the reality that you have no power, that you should be depressed, you're worthless, useless, you have no skills, no talents, nobody listens to you. And so sometimes we put the cart before the horse. So this technique, without telling you what to do, it's just a strong suggestion, it really makes a big difference so that you can then move forward in even exploring what you think your truth is. Because if it isn't what you thought your truth was, or what you thought it was and you did it and it wasn't your truth, at least you won't get nuked to the point that you really go back into the regression again, or back into the depression and say, medicate me, I'll come out in 5 years and try this again. Or the little Punxsutawney Phil goes back in his cave because you saw your shadow. It's simply to recognize that you don't breathe. And I checked all of you out, and that includes you too, sweetie, that we have a room full of people who aren't breathing. And so as soon as I say breathe, I'm just going to watch around and make sure all of you, hi guys, to recognize that we've also been trained, when you're listening to somebody, you better not miss anything that they say, even if it's like, I'm not saying anything all that important that you have to like hold your breath and listen. And I'm not your parent, so I'm not going to quiz you on it or test you, but you'll find you've all been trained that if you're listening, like even when you go to the movies, which isn't even an intellectual experience in most cases, you'll come out yawning a lot, feel real, oh, it's just, there's just the crowd, it's the bad air. So you were really paying attention and holding your breath extra cautiously. Or I noticed in school, or when I was in the university system, that between classes, everybody comes out of the classroom just yawning, or when I would do lectures, I watched everybody start to yawn, and it says, you guys, you just hold your breath as long as you can, finally, maybe it's a good idea to breathe now. So when I looked at all of you, I saw you breathe fine, and all you needed was just a simple reminder system. And so I don't see anybody, as I look at you, that has any problems with regular breathing. And what I mean by regular breathing is just using your lungs to their full capacity. Not hyper-breathing, where you breathe it 5 or 6 times and over you drop. But just most everybody in the room breathes half to a third. And two-thirds of the room was breathing at a third. It's real shallow. I've been watching you all since you came in, because before I did this chat, I wanted to make sure I gave you fair opportunity, so it wasn't just you listening to me. And you guys were off the hook. I only got to watch you since you walked in the door. So when we're breathing shallowly, there's a number of things that happen. And I want to give you the what happens so you understand why to do the breathing. And it works for all ages and all groups. And you're designed. These lungs are designed that you have there for your bodies. And if you're only using a third of those lungs, then two-thirds of the life force, the prana, the mana, the energy that your body needs for its sustenance or for its expression, for its inspiration, and then to fulfill that inspiration after feeling fulfilled to then demonstrate it. If you're only getting a third, then where does that two-thirds come from? That at least you're all alive today, so you must have gotten some energy from someplace else. Some of it can come from your food, though we're actually very inefficient translators in food. The sunlight and air gives you much more energy than food does. So when you're not breathing, it usually your body reroutes the energy you didn't get from your joy, from your sexuality. Now, sexuality isn't just sex. We're talking about, hello, this is who I am. This is a full presentation of me. This is it. This is my sexuality. This is my beingness. It comes from your joy, your sexuality. It'll short out from your work. But the biggest place you'll see it is when it's time to do something fun. Did I talk to you about this, Edith? Is this a chat we had? So many people run into this one. Like, the biggest test I've seen work for people who, especially people who have a lot of yellow like this, whose job is to have joy. And you think that when something fun's coming up, you're going to have fun. So let's say you're going dancing tonight, and you're all excited. I'm going to the dance. You are going dancing tonight, by the way. So that's a perfect analogy. I just got that. Thank you very much. So we're going dancing tonight. Edith's invited us. And so you're after tonight, let's say okay, we're going dancing. That sounds like fun. And you're at your closet, or you're getting dressed, or you're getting ready, and all of a sudden, you're like really tired. Or you'll create an argument with the person you thought you were going to go and have fun with. And it could be before the big date or finally out to, I see it on vacation all the time. I've always lived in vacation spots, and I'm amazed that why do people go on vacation when all it does is you yell at each other for the entire time? Or it's like the world's worst arguments you can remember. Oh, that Carmel, 53, Hawaii, 92. It's like, almost killed her in 86. And you'll find that when you're about to go and use that energy to do something inspiring or fun or joyful or creative, because when you're not breathing, you go into reactivity, not creativity. You're stifling yourself. When you're about to do something creative, your whole system shorts out, and you don't have the energy to go and do it. Now, as soon as you say, okay, I'm not going, all of a sudden you're lively. I can clean the house. I can do this. As long as I'm not wasting my energy out there. And so you'll find when you start breathing that you'll get all that extra energy. Your body won't sabotage you. It's not going to say to you, "Oh, you're in a war zone, and it's my job to pass out the rations." The delegate who gets enough fuel for what. So first part is to recognize if you're breathing shallowly, you're in survival mode. It puts you in a physiological survival mode, which then has to demonstrate itself outside of you. It puts you into existence. It puts you into what I call reactivity, and since we're here to be co-creative, to be the gods that we are in a co-creative environment, and goddesses. Well, I consider God, I don't have a sex thing with God. You know, God does not have a penis. At least I've never read that in a book. So the gods that you are, or the beings that we can even avoid the word God, to be the unlimited beings that you are. You are here to be co-creative, not co-reactive. And in America, as much as it talks about how creative and progressive it is, it seems very reactive to me. Everybody's in reaction to each other. Well, if you're in reaction, you're not living your life. You're in response to other people's ideas of how it should be. And then, therefore, you end up shoulding on yourself, which adds to that existence mode. I should have done this. I should have done that. If only I'd have done it the way I felt or thought I should have. I don't know where that word should came from. Or I'll try. I'll try. Like if I... You know, Carmen, will you pick up that pen? Well, I'll try to pick it up. And here's lifting my arm, and here's not lifting my arm. Now I will try to lift my arm. Trying means a lot of energy but no result. So if you're not breathing, if you're not really fully co-creating, if you're trying, you're spending extra energy you don't even have to begin with to lift it, and it's still not having any outcomes. It's not going anywhere. Makes you stay into your head. And we certainly take advantage of that in America. You better think before you jump, or it's all, what do you think about that? Or we match you in your grades, how you compare to everything. And most of the, I'm looking around the room, we have some pretty brilliant people in here, but you all have feeling energies too, and kinesthetic. So in fact, there isn't anybody who's more than 50% mental energy, so you all are at least half a feeling person. And so if you breathe shallowly, it makes you stay in your head. You're not in the rest of your body, and it makes you try to think your way out of that paper bag. So if you try to think your way out of suppression or the depression that comes from it, if you try to, well, I'll just force my way through this, you're trying again, using more energy, exhausting yourself more, which leads to a greater depression or a heavier duty suppression that leads to that. So this breathing part is just to simply give you an opportunity to give yourself your best opportunity to present yourselves. When you breathe shallowly and you're not in your solar plexus, you're not feeling prepared at all. It's like if I was to argue with any one of you, oh, Keith, I'm going to argue with you. Okay, I'm ready. You know, we'll take a breath. We'll get behind ourselves. It'll pump up our adrenals. We'll kick some endorphins out. We'll get ready. We're ready to have an exchange. But if you're breathing shallowly, you're always in the mode of getting surprised or being in reaction to stuff. So when you start breathing, we want to get you out of your head. We want to get you into being prepared for life, whatever that means. It doesn't mean that it might not hit the fan, but it won't kill you, or you won't go into depression, or you won't think you're a failure, you won't backslide. It's about being prepared for it, whatever it is. And that includes joy. If you're not even prepared for joy, you might get into reaction with it and miss the boat. It might just seem, oh, I just don't have the energy for this. And it could be the thing that most brings you energy. Also, when you're not breathing, using your full lung capacity, you're just not in your bodies. And it's so many people running around not in your bodies. Even though we have bodies and we feel them, how often do you really feel them? Like, you guys all have big toes on your right feet. Were you noticing that you had legs, let alone right feet, a moment ago? Did you even notice you had a big toe? Now that we've talked about it, where your attention goes, your energy flows. So there it is. And interestingly enough, once you know where it is, you can manage it in time and space. You're here to manage your whole beingness in time and space. And we've kept most of you up here by squishing you. If a heavy weight is on something, like if you need to jack up your car to change a tire, we use the jack actually is a little pump that fills air, and you pump the air in it, and it fills with more and more air, and it lifts it up. We use air to lift up the burden, to lift up the weight. And this thin-looking stuff that doesn't seem to have any strength is stronger than all of it. It's when contained, which is what your lungs are for, and used fully, can lift any weight easily and effortlessly. So the breathing exercise we're going to talk about is designed to get you out of your heads, in your body, out of survival mode, more inspired, so that you can really be prepared for life instead of in reaction to it, so that you can then at least look at suppression from an overview versus having the rock landed on you. And Malcolm X said Plymouth Rock landed on you. He was talking about everybody. It wasn't just him. You guys need to know you came from a bunch of escapees from England who thought they were coming to be free, and they're all called Puritans. And I don't know, somehow that word never intimated free to me. Bear in mind, I grew up in Italy, so I might be wrong. I might have a misinterpretation of American history, but for the most part, what we resist is our own issues. So it was a bunch of control freaks running away from other control freaks instead of doing their homework. They just brought their control issues here. And I see it now in my world, even though I'm not a metaphysician, I'm just an opinionated person who sees things this way, and you can put me in whatever category you want. I've watched in the world where I played with a lot of metaphysicians, they just did the same thing the Puritans did. They left, let's call it their continent of business or thinking or 3D or education. Now they go around in their Birkenstocks with their hairy legs and their flowing cotton they haven't gained a thing other than they knew how to shop properly. They knew how to, where the camo shop was, how to go, you know, we're in war, right? If you're suffocated and smothered and it's not okay to tell your truth, you better go to the military store and buy the right equipment so nobody thinks you're the enemy. And so they're all dressed around saying peace, love, dove, and dope, and they have no idea what they're doing. Or in any world, you go into the corporate world. I've done a lot of consulting in the corporate world, and just because you put them in a suit, and just because Giorgio made or Armani threw it together, and they've got, I was gonna wear my $500 shoes for you guys today, just so I could say look, I bought them too, but it didn't make me any better or any worse. I should have put one $500 shoe here and one tennis shoe here, and go, okay, which makes me better, this shoe or the shoe? It's such a trick. And so in that world, if you dress a certain way or look a certain way and have the zippy car and all that, then all of a sudden you've gained an authority and nobody's doing any homework. And so it's very scary for you guys. So the way to do your homework without having an interface, and again, Jason, and for you guys to know that we were talking about his dad and some homework to do with dad. It was great. Edith walked in and says, well, I did your dad's homework. I nuked him for you. I helped him see where his limitations are. Understand that you're not alone in this, that you don't have to deal with the suppression of your family or your parents or I better fix them before I go on and get a life. Good luck, especially for some of you, like if your parents aren't alive anymore. The homework is to just lift the weight off of yourself. The weight is not the weight that was put on you by the teachers, by your parents, by the Republicans, by the Democrats, by the Whigs, by the Tories, or anybody. Once you've taken it on, you took it on. We didn't give it to you. We presented it to you, but also we presented you with nice things. We presented you with lots of wonderful things. and you just took on the weight. So many people, if we could tell you 60 million wonderful things about yourself, and then as soon as I say one bad thing, well, you know that pimple that you had last week, oh God, yeah, that pimple, and we'll go through this whole depressed thing over this pimple. We just said how amazing you are and wonderful and creative and inspiring and enlivening, but the pimple totally like negates that. You've all been trained to take this one, some one thing at least, and imagine, did we only just give you one thing? I'm sure we gave you at least a dozen so you, to weigh you down with. You took them on. And so the homework is for you to lift the weight off. It's not for us, not for me as a parent to go to my kids and say, gee, I'm sorry, I really screwed up, and good luck, here's $50, go see a therapist. The homework is for you to get responsible for yourselves. Responsibility, as we said at the beginning, is your ability to respond to yourselves, not to me or not to anyone else, and to lift the burden. So in the world of breathing, to lift the burden, it's actually very simple. You guys already do it anyways. We just want, it's more about where your attention goes, your energy flows, like to that big toe. We want you to pay attention to it. What all you guys need is a reminder system. Even though I've been rambling about breathing, you'll notice you forgot to breathe again for a while. Oh yeah, he was talking about breathing, wasn't he? There's a bunch of brilliant people in this room. You're not idiots. You know, but idiots probably breathe better than us because they're not weighted down with suppression. They're totally free. The truth shall set you free. They're just totally breathe better than all of us. When I worked in convalescent hospitals and worked with the retarded kids, I just, they're full of love and joy, and they breathe so much better. They could have taught me about breathing. I miss you so much. And just this big energy comes. And here I'm Mr. Restricted, you know, in survival mode. So our job is to breathe freer without having to lose your mental capacity, without having to lose your spirituality or gain smart. Just be yourself. And you'll recognize that you guys breathe just fine as soon as you get reminded. Now, all you need is a string on the finger. That's it. And those that measure things, those that do statistics, say it takes 20 to 40 days to create a new habit. And I found that to be true watching people. And you need to know that for all of you, this is a lifetime habit. You most likely it started before you were born. All your parents' fears, your mom's and dad's fears, you're in that milieu, and especially your mother's. And it can be very frightening. It can be very suppressive just right there. I know I didn't want to come out. They had to get forceps and drag me out. I came out. So what's happening is you just need a trigger to remind you. I have a favorite one, and bear with my analogy. You'll find it works really well, even though it's a bit crude. We're sitting in a womb. Barbara Walters, forgive me also. As we sit in this womb, and you go out that door or through any one of these doors or through the opening or this archway, it's like rebirthing yourself. It's like a rectangular vaginal pathway. It squeezes you, and you're going into a new space, a new adventure, into the bathroom, into the hallway, into the kitchen, out the door, into here, into that office. It's a new thing. You're about to enter a new world, and everybody, it watches you guys come in and out the door, if you'll pay attention. Everybody, when they go through a doorway, takes a breath. You all are already doing it anyway, so I'm not even asking you to do something other than just pay attention to it. If you'll just pay attention to the fact that you do take a breath, that you do at that moment oxygenate yourself, and you do have an expectation about the next space, you will find that if you'll just pay attention 10 or 20 times a day, just take one breath. We're not wanting you to should on yourself and make it a mental process. You're dealing with a lifetime process of suffocating yourselves, and we simply want you to effortlessly and easily take a couple of months to let your intercostal muscles get used to a new trigger point, so it doesn't have to be shallow, because right now it's used to shallow in your diaphragm, to just allow yourself to breathe easier. We don't want you to hyperventilate and pass out. Just a breath, and then go back to sleep again. And remember every fifth, sixth time. You don't have to should on yourselves and concentrate all the time. You'll find if you'll just remember a few times a day, or for those of you who make lists, to put it on the first, second, or third thing. I know very few people get past the third thing on their list these days with the way time is warping and changing. And so put breathing right at the top of your list if you need that, or every time you grab your car keys. Whatever it is, take a breath. And really, and this room is really stuffy, so you guys are going to have to pay attention to your breathing. When we take a break in a minute, we'll crack the door. But are you recognizing how stuffy it is? Yeah, pay attention to all your body parts. Hear the sounds that are happening. Hear the high-pitched frequency of somebody's radar. You guys probably have some. Can you guys hear that frequency? There's this high-pitched frequency happening. It's usually, it means somebody has an alarm system nearby. that you, when you start paying attention, you'll hear it all becomes part of your entire milieu, so that you're getting constant feedback about who you are in totality instead of just who you think you should be and boxing yourself in and breathing shallowly and suffocating yourself doesn't serve you. Recognize, though, that when you start living your life in truth, it's going to remind most people that they're not. And when you remind somebody that they're not happy with their reality, in America it's okay to get angry. I've found as a therapist that 90% of the time somebody isn't really angry, they're in pain. And it's not okay to say you're in pain. That's part of that suppression thing. Yes, there's this big weight on me, but no, I'm doing fine. You know, just like Charles Atlas, it's okay. But it's okay to all of a sudden, you made that, back to that step again, you made me angry, you made me feel this way. If I'm in response to you, I'm in reaction to you instead of in creation with you. I'm feeling this way, but it's really not that I'm angry. I'm frustrated, or I'm feeling betrayed. I'm giggling. Do any of you see The Birdcage, the show The Birdcage? It's really great. There's a scene in it where Robin Williams is teaching his very feminine boyfriend-girlfriend how to be a man so that he can pretend to be a guy. So they're going, what about those Dodgers? And he goes, yes, what about those Dodgers? How does it make you feel that they lost the game? Betrayed, abandoned. But yes, that'll work. I'm angry, you know. God, kick that Lasorda out of there. Whatever. We're trained to say that we're angry about something versus I feel pain. I feel abandoned, lonely, betrayed, sad. I'm having feelings other than I'm angry. Recognize as you start to breathe more fully and tell your truth, you're not going to live your life suffocated anymore, and you're just going to take up more space psychically and energetically. And people who want you to back down are going to take offense to that, even if you've said nothing. Your homework is just to hold your space. You are not responsible for other people's feelings. That's a big one here. We could probably spend 20 days just on that one chat alone, because we've all been... how many of you have had the privilege when you were little, you've made me so mad, now go to your room? Or who hasn't had that privilege? That's probably the best way to ask. It's all your fault that this is happening. And they don't mean it. That's just what they were taught. And how many times have we done it with our kids? Well, except for you, Edith. You don't know about yours. How many times have we done it with our friends, other people we know, our dogs? Give me my paper. You make me so mad. Well, I left the paper on the floor, and it is a dog. You can put 2 + 2 together, and I'm really angry with myself that I left the paper where the dog can chew it up. 99.999% of the time, if we really are angry, we're angry with ourselves. We're not even angry with that person. We're angry that one more time we're asked to give our power away. One more time we're asked to compromise. One more time we're asked to do this, that, or the other. And if we're really being honest and truthful as we start really recognizing who we are and what we are, when we respond to somebody, the actual response and most appropriate response is, thank you for reminding me of one of my issues. If you'll start using this language, you'll find it's a lot easier to handle a person who's angry or upset. Well, I'm going to call it angry, but know that I don't think they're really angry more often than not. They're just in pain. You've reminded them of their issue. They're in pain, and they're going off on you. And you can simply say one of two things. If you're still holding your space, you can say, wow, I'm sure glad you picked me to be one of the people that reminds you of your issues, because I'm not going to absorb your pain. You're not going to get me to make me responsible for the fact that you're feeling a pain and you don't know how to handle it. I'm willing to hold the space for you. Obviously I've reminded you of it, but I'm not going to absorb it so that you can feel fine in your numbness and I go and get sick. I'll hold the space for you. Or if you get triggered, you can, instead of saying you SOB, da-da-da-da-da, thank you for reminding me of my issues. If it seems so corny at first to say it, if you ever have it said to you, let's say, imagine that you're in one of your favorite tirades and you're yelling, kicking, and screaming at me, and I'm not making you a bad person, because you're not a bad person. You're just a person in pain. You're not even angry. You're just that you think you're angry, and you think you're justified in your anger because I reminded you of one of your issues. In other words, I pissed you off, disappointed you, betrayed you, abandoned you, whatever I've done. You're just triggered. And if I was to sit with you, not as a therapist, but as a therapist we do that, but just in normal life I was to sit with you and say, wow, I've really reminded you of one of your issues. How does that make you feel? I wouldn't add the how does it make you feel. It's already pretty obvious. As a therapist, I just have to, that's an extra $50 if you throw that one in. I see that I've reminded you of one of your issues, and whether I did something wrong or not is really irrelevant right now. You're in pain. And you're responding to your pain. And so anything you do in response to your pain, I'm not going to take personal. It's your this is your pain response. It isn't about, oh, you're educating me on how to do this better. This is how you stay safe. This is a defense mechanism. I'm going to hold the space for you. Now, when you're done doing this, if ever you do get done doing this, maybe we can talk about it. Maybe we can talk about where I might have been able to do a different behavior, or what your expectations were of me, or simply to say to you, you know what, this is who I am. I had two sisters today I did a reading for, and one's a yellow-violet kid, and the other one is her real serious sister who's got lots of emotion and is always there and always available. You know what I'm talking about. and I said to the yellow violet, so how many times a day do you disappoint her? And they both just started laughing so hard they rolled off their chairs, because they just had an argument about that on the way in the car. Because yellow energy, and there's one person, two persons, half this room has yellow energy is a kid energy. And kids don't ever keep their promises. They change their mind. They live their truth in the moment. I'm going to do this. No, I changed my mind. I'm going to do that. And so this one was really mad at her, and what I got her to finally see is, well, I'm really responsible, and can't you just respect the fact that I do all this for you, but you never are available for me? And that means you don't love me or you don't respect me. She's saying, no, I totally love you, respect you, and you can count on me to be consistent about one thing. I'm totally inconsistent. And once you know that somebody's inconsistent and that you can count on it, if you count on them to be consistent, who set up who? She knew her sister well enough to know that she's never kept her word a day in her life, and that she really is a flake, and that's her job, and how dare she take it personal? We have tons of that out there. Everybody's taking you all personal for your truth. Let's say I'm a type A personality, and you are that fun person, and I tell you, no, the world isn't fun. You should be working, and I'm going to shit on you. You should do this, and you should do that. Your job is simply to say thank you for sharing. If you take it on and you think you're a bad person, you've done the taking on. It's not about us. If I am the type A person and Edith, this yellow, wants to go lighten everybody up, comes and gives me a lecture, well, you really should lighten up, and your necktie's just a little too tight, isn't it? You know, and if I all of a sudden think, oh God, I'm a horrible person, I'm mean and I'm nasty and I'm never, I should be this thing I don't even know how to be, I took it on, and I'll end up mad at Edith for the rest of my life. That's not healthy. It's not right. I took that reality on. As we work on this decade of truth, everybody's truths are going to be exposed, and you're all very different people. Some of you are very sensitive, playful people. Some are very loving people. Some are delegators of authority. Some are thinkers. Some are problem solvers. Some are total space cadets. Some of you are a total combination of all of that. We actually all are a combination of all that, but we tend to pick as an identity a way to demonstrate portions of that, and none of it's right and none of it's wrong. When you start breathing, you will find that you will lighten up on yourselves, you will start feeling more inspired and more present, you'll start getting an idea of who you are in reaction to other people, because you won't be reacting any longer. You'll now be saying, wow, there's that person, well, I don't relate to that, or that's not for me, or I can hold my space for them. As you start to breathe and you get in your solar plexus, you're prepared for things. It'll make all the difference in the world. So how many of you have been breathing since I suggested you breathe? A few. I'm not watching you. So, what happens when you don't breathe is you get emotion stuck in your body, and that emotion may not necessarily be yours. And emotion to me means energy and motion. E equals motion. And when energy and motion is pinging around your body and it's yours, you can deal with it, you can address it. But if I put one of my emotions in you and your body's not designed to deal with it, you're going to have to create different ways to handle it. Weight helps handle it. Fat's a great insulator from energy, so you can sort out that weight that has nothing to do with you. Store it off in the corner, because if it's not your energy, you don't get to do anything with it but release it. It's not for you. Or you can choose to forget, or you can choose to get angry, or you can choose to get numb, you can choose to be an alcoholic. Okay, unlimited choices. The thing is, we don't want you to do any of the unlimited choices. All we want you to do is be your real selves. And the minute you start being your real selves, a fascinating thing happens. The moment you start living what you think is your truth, 2 seconds later you have a totally different truth. Any of you who thought you were who you are today, you're not. How can you be that your entire life? It's such a trick. I watch kids in the sandbox, and any of you ever go into the sandbox and go and tell those kids how to build a better sandcastle? like they really need to know, like, let me show you how to do this. Let's get you out of this hell hole. Let me show you how to do this. We already know they're going to learn how to do it. It's part of the growth process. Each and every one of us has a different pace at which we get out of that sandbox, or some of us bypass the sandbox, unfortunately. It's a pretty cool place. Unless there's cats in the neighborhood, then that's a whole other chat. That's why I bypassed our sandbox when I was little. The homework is to give each person an opportunity to grow and to recognize them for who they truly are. And again, I'm picking on Jason today just from previous chats. He's much more of an adult than his dad will ever be a day in his life. Not just because of levels of health, but because of who he is as a person, what he came here to be. And if we make our parents in this situation a person that's really an adult, when number one, there isn't any such thing, and number two, you're already more of an adult than he is, who are you really mad at when you get mad at your dad? Or think you're mad at your dad? And are you really angry, or are you simply in pain that you didn't end up with the adult that you thought you should have? But then again, how many of the people in this room had a parent that was an adult? So one of the setups is ask everybody if they had one. Maybe you could borrow it, but I think you'll be SOL on that. I don't think any of us had one. And so the setup is to recognize that truth and to give yourself permission to be who you are. And when you start demonstrating that truth, you will feel like you're a bad... Who makes you feel like the bad person? Who suppresses you? We do. How dare we be more of an adult or more intelligent or more dynamic or more aggressive or more sexual or more entertaining than our parents or more inspiring? And in America, one of the things we do is we end up waiting for people. W-E-I-G-H-T-I-N-G. Waiting until mom catches up or dad catches up or Uncle Joe, or waiting till that teacher finally acknowledges me. And so, you know, I'm leaning it towards you and using you as an example. It's true for everybody. The main part here is to see where you're lying to yourselves. And the way you get to see how you're lying to yourselves is to start breathing and start being willing to say what's on your mind the minute you have it without running it up the flagpole and what do you think. Be willing to face your fear. Because all of you have been brainwashed on this one. If you tell your truth in America, the land of the free, home of the brave, and you say, give me liberty, we'll give you death. It will seem, it's not a physical death, but it'll seem like a psychic death, emotional death. And the trick is, you're not alone. Everybody's been blackmailed that way. And everybody's almost like waiting for the first group of people to finally say, okay, we'll tell our truth. And I promise you, like a bunch of lemmings, they'll go over that cliff with you. Like, how many people do you know whose lives are working? Yeah, and send them my way. Yeah, how many people told you how life should be whose lives weren't working? And then you take on the guilt and shame because you're not doing it the way your parents said, the system said, the counselor said, your wife said, your boyfriend, girlfriend said, your children said, the book said. And you need to look to who told you how it should be. Do they even know what they're talking about? Are they having the kind of life you want to have? Most likely not. If you do it their way, and if you keep shaming yourself into doing it their way, you're going to have their life. That's the greatest crime, but nobody told you that when you were little. I really hate my mom and I hate my dad, but I'm going to feel really guilty if I don't do it their way. You know, we hate it, and we never really hate the person, we just hate it. The ignorance, the suppression, there comes that rock again. And yes, depression comes out here, blood and guts comes out here, but anger, pain, all those parts squeeze out. Malaise, hopelessness, suicide, and all of, we're really getting busted.